All right, welcome back, everyone. Once Upon a Frey, Season 3, Episode 3. I'm your host, Jason.
And your other host, Lisa. To start us off, I just want to mention to make sure to rate and review us on whatever platform you listen to us on. And also, don't forget to follow us on Instagram at Once Upon a Phrase.
And if you're in the Chicagoland area, check out our biggest sponsors, Fat Chris's Pizza and Such. They're in the Andersonville area. They do pickup, delivery, dine-in, all that fun stuff. And speaking of sponsors, our good friends at Second City Threads came up with a pretty cool, a couple pretty cool t-shirt designs. So if you're interested in repping any Once Upon a Phrase gear, just head on over to secondcitythreads.com.
We can link that on our Instagram page as well for anyone who wants to look at that site.
Yes, can and will. They got some other cool stuff on there too, like a lot of designs. They seem to have kind of just a bunch of stuff. And now Once Upon a Phrase stuff is part of that.
All right, so today's episode is about animals, part three. There's a lot of phrases that deal with animals.
Yeah, we like doing this. I remembered when we first started the podcast season one, it was like, all right, let's theme every episode. Let's try to make it, you know. But we just had so many, like, about music and animals and medieval and
numbers. And numbers was another big one, too, yeah.
And it was like, I think every season we're going to have to do a part two and a part three to kind of squeeze this all in. So, this is Animals Part 3, and I'm going to get us going. Lisa, what's your favorite cocktail?
I don't know. I love a tequila sunrise. I do also like my Captain Morgan, and now it's Diet Coke or Sprite. Kind of depends on what I'm in the mood for. I do love a good margarita, though.
Okay.
Should've started with that one.
So, cocktail, we're going to put in the animal episode because technically a cock is an animal, but maybe not the one you're familiar with for this first explanation. I'm trying to think about how to go about this the best. This one's a little different for me, right? So we know a cocktail is a mixed drink, right? So all Lisa forgot we're doing a podcast, not a YouTube video. She's nodding to me like in agreements. Yes.
So it's been a long day.
Let me try it again. We all know a cocktail is a drink, right, Lisa?
Yes, Jason, it's a drink.
There we go. So I was doing some digging, and I found there's no real definitive one. So I dug through, you know, what I found to be the most reputable, and I want to see which one, Lisa, you buy into the most, right?
All right, I'm listening.
So first theory for a cocktail is, you know, with a rooster, you know, they're big, they're colorful, right? So they would take their feathers, you know, from their tails, and they would put them in the drinks, right? As sort of like, I guess now, if you go to a tropical island, you know, you get the little umbrella drink.
Yeah, those are cute.
Yeah, so this was something that they did back in the day. They would put the feather of a rooster in these drinks, and they were large and colorful, and it was eye-catching and decorative, and it was, you know, just like the beverage, right? The drink itself was colorful and layered and decorative, right?
Was it too, like, I'm thinking, was a decorative purpose to entice more people to order it or just to make it just look prettier?
I'm going to say the first one, right? To entice. Same reason we put the little umbrella in, right?
I don't know if I want to.
Or when you do
it. I don't know if I want a rooster's feather in my drink, though.
Ah, this was the 18th century. They didn't believe in germs.
I'd pass on that. Maybe something straight up. I don't know. Figure it out.
Oh, yeah, right. Anybody that's ever met my wife, she's never drinking anything straight up.
If it was that or a rooster's feather in my drink, I think I would drink something straight up. I'd learn how to like it.
She's lying. Okay, second theory, right? Every time we do these episodes, I was like, I'm going to YouTube how to correctly pronounce these things so I don't sound
to phonetically pronounce them?
Yeah, and then I forget. So this is called.
How are you going to butcher this one up?
Oh, it's going to be bad. The coquetel, a French word, right? Coquetel, which is a term that it's used for mixed drinks, right? Simple as that, right? It means to sort of maybe derives from the other French word, coquette, which means like to flirt or kind of be dandy. And that's kind of what a cocktail is. It's a stylish, fancy, dandy drink for the young, dashing young gentleman. You don't seem very impressed with that one, right?
Well, you know what I thought you were going with? We did a phrase. I don't know if it was a phrase or like it was a word, saloon. Or one of the phrases we did a few episodes ago. It was pretty much that it was a French word and that we pronounced it wrong to the point where it became the word we use now.
Yeah, so
So
this
that's
is,
what I was kind of thinking you were going with.
I mean, it is, right? The coquetel, French word, meaning layered drink, so over time, we just sort of gets like a lot of Americans do. They, kind of make it their own, and then the American, not slang, but like the American,
Was mispronounced over and
yes.
over again,
I was looking
then
for a
it's
nice
like,
way of saying that.
well, it ends up being like a bad game of telephone where it's mispronounced enough and it's carried through, and that becomes the new way that it's referred to.
Well, even in the last episode, right? 10-gallon hat. Remember that one? So, option three, horse racing, right? So, a cocktail is this thing that they would do during the horse racing, right? They would a certain type of horse that not a purebred horse, right? But a sort of mixed breed of horses, right? They would take these mixed breed horses and they would shape their tail, right? Because you could tell a mixed breed had like a different shaped tail.
Okay.
Right, so because of that, right, they would use this term for like a mixed racehorse. It would be a
Like a
cocktail.
mixed breed, yeah.
Yeah, because the tail of those horses would come up a little bit, similar to be, a rooster, and
Okay.
you could tell it wasn't a purebred. Right, so because it was mixed, they brought this idea into the bar as well, right? And you could see that in, early 1800s, especially in New York, in the bar scene, they would refer to these mixed drinks like mixed racehorses, right? They had cocktails, these racehorses that weren't purebred. So these mixed drinks that had, other spirits and sugars and bitters and water, all these things mixed in, those drinks were like the cocktails, like of the mixed horses. So what do you think? If you had to guess, because I'll give you my idea of which one I think holds the most water, but
I like the horse racing one. I think that to me makes the most sense.
so I would agree that one makes the most sense, but the one I found kind of like the most evidence on was theory two. We're just mispronouncing the words.
I mean, like I said, when I listened to you say it and I made my comment, that sounds the most likely.
From doing this podcast for a few years now and all the research we've done, it seems like, I mean, oh, this was a foreign word that we just adopted and mispronounced is a pretty common explanation on this podcast. So I would say that theory number two, the cocktail, is probably where it comes from. But again, there was no evidence to suggest that any one of these three is the right one. But these were the top three. And like I said, we Americans love to mispronounce stuff. All right, what is your next animal phrase? What are you going to talk to us about, Lisa?
I'm going to talk to you about a little birdie told me. Are we familiar with this one? I'm sure you are.
Yeah, I hear it a lot in like mob movies. Like whenever you're talking about like snitching, like, oh, a little bird told me,
I've heard it. I don't know about I don't watch a lot of mob movies, but I've heard it as a teacher. Like I've heard students say it to each other.
Oh, I teach high school now. They don't snitch on each other. Nobody tells me anything.
So, for our listeners, a little birdie told me refers to hearing something from someone, but not sharing your source.
Yeah, you're keeping it a secret, right? You don't want to reveal your source, right? Maybe like a reporter would do this, right? Because you got to keep your sources a secret.
Right. So, there are two possible origins for this phrase. One possible origin goes back to the Old Testament of the Bible. It was a statement made from, and I even phonetically have this written out, and I apologize if I still butcher it, by Ecclesiastes.
Ecclesiastes, yes.
Ecclesiastes. Okay. That was bad. Thank you. Right, so the phrase says, a little bird might carry your words. A bird might fly and tell what you said.
What does that mean?
So that verse was said to advise people not to talk ill about the king or the rich because it was thought that they would find out.
It's gossip, right? The
Yes.
grapevine. You know, if you're going to say something, it's going to make its way
Yeah,
back.
even in they were like pretty much even in private, speaking ill of those will kind of come back at you.
Okay. So, I mean, if it's in the Bible, there's so many phrases that we get from the Bible because a lot of those things, you know, have made their way. They've obviously stood the test of time, and the Bible in its many versions and translations has had influence all over the world. So,
So also a lot, just like a lot of our phrases, this one also has a possible origin back to ancient Greece. And it was said that the use of birds were used to deliver messages during the ancient times, and that a lot of times athletes would send pigeons home to share the news of their victories.
okay, now I'm no expert on the Bible, but I'm fairly competent in ancient
Historian
Greece.
over here.
Right. So I really buy this one because the whole pigeon message thing,
Is
they've
that like
been,
really a thing?
yeah, oh, absolutely. They've been doing that forever. I mean, in World War I, they would send messenger pigeons across no man's land and to get information.
Okay, so my thought on this is, would you like send them with like a piece of paper that they would hold in their mouth,
No,
or like
no,
how are they delivering a message?
no, no. I've
Or is it
seen it.
more like them returning or them coming there is a message in itself?
So yes, that could be true. Like this use of birds in itself could be a message, but if we're talking actual messenger pigeons, they would either have something around their neck, almost like a collar, but usually around their foot, and they would take a. I mean, you're just talking about a tiny piece of paper rolled up. Trying to think of what it would compare to.
Like a
Maybe,
scroll, you're
yeah,
saying?
but like the
Like a
thickness of
teeny
a
tiny scroll?
the thickness of maybe like a pencil, but a third of the size, if a quarter of the size of it. I mean, it's a tiny thing.
Okay.
And they would roll it up and, like I said, attach it to their leg. And even that, I mean, if any of our listeners have ever seen Game of Thrones, this is a big thing in Game of, Lisa, again, forgetting we're on a podcast. She's like shaking her head, like, no, I don't watch. But
I mean, you watch it before bed every night, but I
yeah.
see little bits and pieces, but I've never seen these.
Yeah, so in Game of Thrones, it's ravens. They send messenger ravens with messenger messages. Sorry.
How do they know they're going to reach their like if I was sending you a raven with the message, how does the raven know where to go and where to come back to?
So I can't speak for the raven because that's again that's a Game of Thrones thing that could be purely fictional. But for as far as messenger pigeons that the ancient Greeks would have used and that they've used in World War One. Those are trained pigeons. Those aren't, I mean, I don't know where many of our listeners are listening from, but
The pigeons I see
way
like
from
in downtown
Chicago.
Chicago, they don't look very trained, but hey.
Them pigeons don't even want to move out of the way when you're walking, let alone bring you a message. But yeah, so the ones I'm referring to, they're trained pigeons to go from one place to another and kind of carry this. So it, you know, a little birdie told me, I don't know. I mean, it's in the Bible. So I could see where that phrase might have its roots, but I would say in practical everyday use, it's probably this homing pigeon, not homing pigeon, but a messenger pigeon kind of back and forth where we get that phrase from.
I'm still in awe how these pigeons are able to find their way back and forth, but
Well, I mean, you can train a pigeon, like people race pigeons.
no, but like I think it's different. Like if I was sending it from my house to my mom's house and that was the only place it was going to go, sure, I could train it to go back and forth. But if you're talking about during the war or during other times, necessarily people are not in the same place. They might be in the same city, the same town, like, or are they trained to only go from like point A to point B and then back to point A? That's what I'm saying.
Oh, these are details I don't have. But I
You know what I'm
imagine it's
saying,
something
though?
and now I'm forgetting the name of the movie, but that movie where they raced pigeons, it wasn't about a location. I think it was about their home. They were like trained to find their home.
Right.
So maybe that has something to do with it. but I don't know exactly how you train a pigeon to carry a message. But the soldiers did it during World War I. The Greeks did it. Possibly done during medieval times, if, Game of Thrones is teaching me anything. Or, it doesn't have to be literal. It could be figurative. This was the actual, way people are talking about messages being delivered as like gossip getting around,
Interesting. And now I'm really curious how to train a pigeon. Not that I want to do it, but I'm curious how they're trained to travel like that.
I mean, you can't teach forever, Lisa. You're gonna have to retire one day. You could train pigeons.
My passive income? I don't know if that's going to make enough passive income, but okay.
We'll see.
All right, what do you got for us?
All right, barking up a wrong tree. Lisa, if you're barking up the wrong tree, what are you doing?
I think of it like you have the wrong lead. Like you're going in the wrong direction.
Yeah, I mean, you got bad information,
Yeah.
or I guess doesn't apply to our regular life. But if you're barking up the wrong, like you're accusing the wrong person, or you're trying to get information about the wrong thing, basically you're putting a lot of effort toward the wrong person or thing, right?
Right.
So this actually comes from hunting dogs, right? If you any of our listeners are hunters, I guess it depends on what kind of hunters you are. But oftentimes, if you're hunting, quail or pheasant or any sort of bird, they would have a dog go and fetch it and bring it back, right?
Wait, what do you mean? So what I'm getting at is, so like if you were hunting, you would shoot the quail or whatever it was, and then the dog would go fetch the dead animal for you?
Yes. So hunting, what I'm getting at here is hunting dogs have been around for centuries, right?
They're trained to like scent with the
Yes.
to I can't talk today. Train to find the scent of whatever animal you're hunting or whatever you're hunting for.
Yeah, and go get
Okay.
the, bring it back, right? So essentially, before, we think of food that we would eat, right? Like pheasant or, duck or something like this, right? Hunting dogs have been around a very long time, and in some of their earliest uses, it was to go catch things like squirrels and raccoons, right? So the thing about squirrels and raccoons is they're fast, right? When I walk our dog in the morning, if that girl sees a squirrel, I better hold on tight. She ain't gonna catch it, but she's gonna try, right?
Right.
So these squirrels and these raccoons, they would run. Dogs would chase them. They would go up a tree. Now, again, could the dog be, literally barking up the wrong tree? Possibly, right? Dogs aren't perfect. Maybe they see the, maybe they're just at the wrong tree. But usually, what happens is, some of these smaller tree-dwelling animals, like squirrels and raccoons, they can jump from branch to branch, right? So the dog would see them go up tree A. Go to tree A, bring its owner to tree A, but these animals are long gone. The squirrel or the raccoon has tree hopped and jumped branches and is five trees down, but the dog doesn't see any of this. And the dog's scent leads them up that tree. So they are quite literally barking up the wrong tree. And now they've got good information, but it's a bad lead, and your effort is for nothing. So we do see this come up in print, and this is probably one of my favorite things about the podcast is not only breaking down these words and phrases, but when do they actually make their way into rotation? And it's always a book, a newspaper, or a TV show, some form of media that does it. So in like the 1830s, the Tennessee Journal of Agriculture uses this, right? It makes context to, if you're making a mistake or pursuing, the incorrect course, you're barking up the wrong tree. And once it's on paper and it's in a book or it's,
Any form of media,
yeah,
you've
once
learned.
it's there, I mean, it's there. And it might only get used a lot in certain regions or by certain generations. But, a lot of these words and phrases, we don't actually know the origin because they were probably spoken only for decades, if not longer, before they actually made their way written down somewhere. And this is probably one of them, but those early 1800s, and there it is. We're just going to say it all the time now. All right, bring us home.
All right, so my last phrase for us is can of worms. Are we familiar with this one?
Yeah, can of worms. Isn't this like, you know, now I can't even think of an explanation. It's like stuff's going to get bad, right?
Yeah, it usually refers to something that will lead to like more problems and more complications than you anticipated it.
Like you didn't see it coming and you kind of wish you hadn't opened that can of worms.
Right. So it likely emerged during the 20th century when fishermen, when they were going to buy their bait, they would go get their bait and it would be worms in a can, like a tin can. And when they would open that can, a lot of times the worms would start spilling out and wiggle around and pretty much cause like a chaotic mess, much more than they anticipate going fishing for the day.
Oh, I've been there. Whenever I've gone fishing, you know, depending on what you're fishing for, sometimes you're using crankbait, sometimes you're using live bait. Whenever you're using live bait, you got no idea. When you open it up, they go everywhere, and you just got to hope to contain it so you don't lose the money you spent on your bait.
Okay, because this is what I had to ask. When I looked this one up, I was quite confused. I've never gone fishing. Not my thing. But so it used to come in a tin can. So you couldn't see how many worms are in there, and I'm assuming there was some sort of a lid on it. So why aren't we opening it up? Like, how are they spilling out?
It's not that they're spilling out. It's that they're slimy and chaotic. Like, worms move in all the different directions. And in this can, there are probably a bunch of them. And it's just all happening at once, you know? And I'm trying to explain this, and it only makes sense if you've ever been there, right? If you ever gone to open up your bait and they're just, or even not even worms, if you're using minnows, you know, they're in the water, you know, these tiny fish, same thing. They're so chaotic and they're everywhere, and you've just gotta, you know, I've fished with maggots as bait before too. And oh my god, Lisa,
if you only saw my face, ugh, gross. Okay.
It's just they're bugs, they're insects, they're slimy, and they don't just move straight and turn left and turn. They're everywhere all the time, and you got to try to get a hold of one before it wiggles out.
I think the only totally off topic, but the only reference I have is I don't know what pet I owned at one point in my childhood, but we had to get live crickets for the pet, and the live crickets would come in this, like, they'd take like a little piece of the it was almost like a piece of an egg carton, and then they would just literally just throw a whole bunch of crickets into this baggie that was kind of filled with air so that they didn't die. And they were just all over the place. I remember ever having to feed my animal that it was chaos trying to get this cricket out without causing all the rest of them to go into mass chaos. So I guess that's the only reference I have in terms of.
But no, I think it's a good one because, I mean, the focus word here is chaos, right?
Yes.
And isn't that what the phrase is talking about? Like when you open a can of worms?
Right. It's one of those things where I feel like in life you are given situations where when it's contained, right, just like the can of worms, when it's closed up, it's manageable. But then in a lot of situations, that can is opened or the situation has changed and it becomes unmanageable or more work than anticipated.
Yeah. So I guess my question is, when doing your research, how does this, I don't know if you came across this or not, but like, how does this phrase that is a very specific, like, niche phrase, like, I guess only somebody who fishes would kind of understand this visually, how does this become a thing that we say?
So it actually started, found in print in the early 1900s, specifically 1919, in a New York Times article, when it was used in a context to describe something that was complicated or messy. And it said it referred to the idea that something, once opened or dealt with, would lead to a mess of problems, just as opening a can of worms would result in a wiggling, chaotic mess. So pretty much comparing a difficult situation or an unmanageable situation to opening up a can of worms,
which is where
it kind of drew. I mean, being the New York Times article, that many people read. I mean, that was before we had obviously phones or, you know, social media and things like that to gather our news. Everyone read the New York Times, so that's
Yeah.
kind
Even
of.
outside of New York, that was one of those like papers that was read everywhere. So if it like once a phrase is in, it's like what we just said for the last one, right? Once it's there forever,
Yeah,
you
and
know.
then by the 1940s, it kind of gained some more momentum and it was used in different forms of media like television and movies and things like that. So it kind of just became a mainstream word that people use outside of fishing.
So also one of the like my favorite things is kind of understanding which ones of these phrases are figurative versus literal, and sometimes it's they were one and then the other, or you know, kind of vice versa. But for like you who have never been fishing or dealt with live bait, it's easy to look at this phrase like, oh, the can of worms, and think, oh, this is purely like a figurative expression, but it is quite literal, right? To see what happens when you open and that can of worms and everything spewing out and they're going in every which direction. And I know we've said it a handful of times, but it's chaotic. And you take a very figurative phrase, but it's not, it's literal, right? And when you can make sense of it literally, then when you use it figuratively, I think it's even cooler. Sorry, I'm totally geeking out right now.
No, I and totally on topic with what we're talking about, but just thinking of another little animals or creatures. When I think of the phrase, I almost looked up ants in your pants for this episode, but I realized it's quite the literal phrase because I could imagine like ants are constantly moving, but I could only imagine like if I had an ant crawling up my leg, just like my children, I'm like, you have ants in your pants, you can't stop wiggling. So literally, like if you have ants in your pants, you physically will be wiggling and moving all around, similar to like a can of worms in the sense that like wiggling, not the mess, but
No, I got you. But
I
anybody with
just think
kids
of
is like,
seeing
oh, I know
children
what ants
ants
in
in
your
her pants.
pants. Yeah. Do you ever play that game? It was one of these. But the look on your face, I'm gonna see
What
it.
game?
It's called Ants in Your Pants. You know the game we play with our son that's, I don't know if any.
The monkey poop game?
Yes, that. So it was set up like that. It's called Ants in Your Pants, where you had to take ants and there was like a little springboard and you had to fling them into a giant pair of pants.
No, being that I've heard stories of you growing up and things like that, when you looked at me and asked me if I've ever played Ants in Your Pants, I was like, what kind of a game did you and your guy friends play as kids?
No, what? This is a family podcast, Lisa. You stop
No,
that.
not like that, but like putting an ant on someone's leg and see who can like sit still without wiggling or something, because that's something weird
No,
you guys would
what?
do.
It's a board game. They sold it at like Walmart or something.
Don't give me this look like you've never done goofy,
Okay.
goofy things as a young kid.
First off, everybody's done goofy things as a young kid. We're gonna move on because you're trying to make me look weird. And that's my job for you. No, that's my job for you.
Right, what do you got for our listener request this week?
All right, our listener request. So I was actually going to open this up with. So this is from a good friend of ours. His name is Joey. And I was going to open this up with. He texted us in the middle of the night. But I don't think he did. I forgot to look at the timestamp. I think we just go to bed early, because I looked at the
Yeah,
timestamp.
middle of the night for us could be like
It
9:30,
was
10
9:30.
o'clock
He
at
t it was
night.
like 9:28 when he sent this text, but we were already asleep because we have to wake up ridiculously early and we're old. But I woke up to this, right? So whatever. Listener request from our boy Joey. It is sick as a dog. So at first I thought, I don't. I mean, this means what it means, right? Sick as a dog, like you're just sick.
I know, but why the dog?
So that's what I was thinking too, right? Why a dog? Why not, you know, sick as a cat? Or for I don't know. I'm drawing a
It's,
blank on any other animal besides
you
a
know what's
dog and
really
cat
funny,
right now.
whether listeners know the meaning of these words or not, when you say the one versus the other, sick as a dog, that makes sense because I've heard it before. When you say sick as a cat, I'm like, that's the strangest thing I've ever heard.
Okay, but it's 'cause you've never heard it. Like
Right, but
if
that's what I'm saying. Like, even without knowing the meaning, you know one just sounds off and one just, for some reason, sounds normal.
Well, you're just comfortable with
Right.
one, right? But yeah, so it's like what you said, why dog, right? And maybe that's what Joey was alluding to, right? Why do we, how do dogs get the honor of, you know, being sick all the time? Like, why do we,
Honor? Okay.
why, honor in the sense that like this phrase lives on. you know, I guess that's
Okay.
so whatever. So I did some digging, and all animals get sick. All people get sick, right? So what singled out dogs that made them part of this phrase, sick as a dog? And it's just recently, right, in the last, you know, handful of decades, where people actually treat their dogs better than some people, right? Like the we
So
I mean
I know dogs that eat better food than some adult eat for dinner.
yeah I so it's like we got to get that notion out of our head first, right? Because I think, and again, there are plenty of people, or you know, plenty of dogs that, you know, don't get treated this well. We know there's a lot of strays and things out there as well, but you know, recently, dogs get treated really well, but that is a newer thing, right? For a long, long period of time, even though we considered them pets, they were not members of the family like they are today, right? They were outside dogs. They were on the
Like
farm, or
prairie
yeah,
dogs and
prairie dog.
okay.
They were worker dogs or something. You know what I mean? So for oh, like so, my mom, I don't know, maybe 5 years ago, right? Moved to Tennessee and bought a house, you know, out there, and their house came with a dog, right? Their land just had a dog on it, right? It was, and she has since then like taken it in and made it a house dog, but it spent its whole life as an outside dog, right?
Right.
So because of this, and they were always outside, and they were always working, and they were always in, you know, different environments, they were pretty vulnerable to getting sick, right? Dogs very, very commonly caught lots of different diseases and incurable conditions, and people were often around dogs that were just sick all the time. And because they were one of the few animals that we keep as pets, you were exposed to that. You saw that dog sick, right? If a bird is sick or a raccoon is sick, like you just don't see them, right? Those aren't domesticated. Well, I mean, birds are, but you know what I mean? They're not domesticated in the sense that you would notice if your neighborhood skunk was sick, you know? But you see dogs, right? So anyways, long way of saying that, you know, because they were outside, and especially for centuries, there was tons of strays, especially through, you know, like medieval period in Europe, like lots of strays. And even in the Americas, they were farm animals, or, you know, working on the farm, right? And they just weren't treated in a way that kept them healthy very long, because they don't make money. Like, you know, cows, chickens,
Or they had to keep
goats.
them healthy to sell them to make money off of whatever they could. But a dog was just, like you said, a worker dog or just a farm dog that served little purpose. So they saw no purpose in putting in the efforts.
To keeping it clean and giving it clean water and keeping it warm and, you know, out of the forest so it wasn't getting bit by ticks, you know, these types of things. Now, and again, this is just recently, and people treat their dogs very well. And again, I understand that's
Man's
not the
best
case.
friend.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. The idea of man's best friend is new. And now we take them to vets and they get medication and surgeries and, you know, vaccines and all this stuff. They weren't doing that a long time ago, right? So it was very common for you just to see sick dogs everywhere, right? They weren't, yeah, I keep trying to think of the word cash crop, right? But not crop. They weren't an animal that produced cash, so you didn't take care of them like we do now. So you got known as to be sick as a dog. And it goes back a long time, right? We're talking in the 1500s. You know, we see it come up in something called the Complaints of Scotland. We see it in the 17th century start to be used verbally more and then ends up in print. And just, I mean, we're talking centuries of just sick dogs being the norm. So when you're really feeling sick, you're sick as a dog.
It's crazy that this phrase has originated so long ago.
Yeah, this is a good one because, you know, we can always go back to all the 1800s. And that's long, but it's not that long in regards to, I mean, this one goes back to the mid 1500s. So,
It's a long time.
well, on that note, we're gonna call it, Right? Remember, please, if you're in the Chicagoland area, go hit up Fat Chris's Pizza and Such, Andersonville. They'll deliver, dine in. They got everything you need. And if you want to check out SecondCityThreads.com, they got the Once Upon a Phrase merch and a lot of other cool stuff.
Also, don't forget, as usual, to rate and review us and follow us on Instagram at Once Upon a Phrase. You have any ideas for listener requests or any phrases that you are interested in, send us a DM, or if you know us personally, send us a text.
All right. Thanks a lot, guys.
Bye.